Chapter entitled Pure Devotional Service, text number 13. Sonaku vacha iti abhivyartam laja nisamya bharatarsava kimanyat prastavam bhuyo Vayasakim Nishinkabim Sonakuvacha Ichabivya Ichabivyatam Racham Itabivyatam Raja Nisamya Bharatasabha Manyat Pristavam Bhuyo Vayasakim Rishim Kavim Shonaku Vacha Ichabhi Vyaritam Raja Isamya Bharatar Sabha Kemanyat Pristavam Bhuyo Iti, thus, abhivyartam, all that was spoken, Raja, the king, Nishanya, by hearing, Bharatari Sabha, Maharaj Pariksit, Kim, what, Anya, more. Pristavam, did he inquire from him? Buyaha, again. Vayasakim, unto the son of Vyasadeva. Hrishim, one who is well versed. Kavim, poetic. Translation. Shanika said, the son of Vyasadeva, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, was a highly learned sage and was able to describe things in a poetic manner. What did Maharaj Pariksit again inquire from him after hearing all that he had said? Purport. A pure devotee of the Lord automatically develops all godly qualities, and some of the prominent features of those qualities are as follows. He is kind, peaceful, truthful, equable, faultless, magnanimous, mild, clean, non-possessive, a well-wisher to all, satisfied, surrendered to Krishna, without hankering, simple, fixed self-control, a balanced eater, sane, mannerly, prideless, grave, sympathetic, friendly, poetic, expert, and silent. Out of these 26 prominent features of a devotee, as described by Krishnadas Kaviraj in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, the qualification of being poetic is especially mentioned herein in relation to Sukadev Goswami. The presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam by his recitation is the highest poetic contribution. He was a self-realized learned sage. In other words, he was a poet amongst the sages. Om Nagyan Timarandasya Ganandana Salakaya Sakshuyam Tanyana Tasmai Sikurve Namaha Mukham Kuruti Vachalam Pangam Mangai Tegarim Yad Kripatamahan Vande Sikurum Tinataranam Sri Chaitanya Nisvaram Paramananda Madhavam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, a pure devotee is ready to accept that the body is like a boat, and that the spiritual master becomes the captain of that boat, and that the Vedas are the favorable winds. So in this way, the pure devotee is not being controlled by the dictates of the body and mind. And in that way, he can realize that he is completely an instrument of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada came down the staircase, and at the bottom of the staircase he made a little pirouette and said, "My spiritual master turned me into a diamond." Because the diamond is not obstructing light. Rather, the diamond is taking that light that comes in and reflecting it in all directions. So in that way, the pure devotee is an instrument in the hands of the spiritual master, of the acharyas, and of Krishna. And we see that. Srila Prabhupada, his purports are so nice. I went to visit our Sridhar Maharaj in his latter days on the planet, and his health was not good, and I was visiting him in a flat near the Bhaktivedanta hospital, and when I came there, there was a sheet on the door with a full schedule, and the schedule said that 11 o'clock Srimad Bhagavatam, 1 o'clock bhajans, 3 o'clock again some other activity. The whole day was booked up with activities. So when I came in, I said, "Well, Maharaj, quite a schedule you got there." He said, "Yeah, otherwise people just talk about my liver." He had a liver problem, you know. He said, "All day they just talk about my liver." So, like that, he was very transcendental and trying to spend his last days deeply absorbed. And Gopi Puranadana was there. And Gopi Puranadana started to analyze the purports of Prabhupada. And he was just having next to him the same book that Prabhupada had on his desk when he was translating, a book that was published by the Gaudiya Math with the various in the 1930s with the various commentaries of all the acharyas on Srimad Bhagavatam, and that was the book that Prabhupada was one of the books that Prabhupada was traveling with, and that was always by his servant put on his desk ready for translation. So Gopi Puranadana had the same book and was going through the purport and then reading little fragments. He said, "See, this is actually from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and that actually is from Sridhar Swami's commentary, and this is where Prabhupada quotes Vira Raghava Goswami, and here," and he was analyzing the whole purports, and we could see how The purports were built up, woven together out of statements of the Acharyas, and then a statement of Prabhupada, and then a statement of the Acharya, and then again a realization of Prabhupada. And it was just very wonderful to see how faithful Srila Prabhupada was, and how he, when he wrote his purports, just delivered whatever revelations came from the Acharya. He delivered that to us and then added his own. And that makes it so wonderful, that it's not like some display of great intellectualism of a commentator, but it is the faithful rendition of an instrument of the Supreme Lord and the previous Acharyas. And therefore, when we are reading Srila Prabhupada's purports, we do so with full faith. And Prabhupada wrote these purports in great humility. And still, he said that actually my purports are more important than the verses, which doesn't sound so humble, right? Because the verses are supposed to be Krishna's words, or, you know, the Shastras. How can you say my purports are more important than the Shastra? But it makes perfect sense, because, after all, without these purports, we cannot understand the verses. We would get it all wrong. If we would read the whole Bhagavatam, and we'd get it all wrong, every verse, we would give it a wrong explanation, a wrong twist, as has been going on for so long, where different Brahmanas in India, who were all expert in Sanskrit, have derived different meanings from the scriptures, and they got it wrong. Because sampradaya vihine ye mantra nisphalamata. Without the sampradaya, the mantras will not produce the fruits. And Prabhupada was just speaking in the authorized Chaitanya Saraswat sampradaya, in the line coming down from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the line coming down from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And in this way, very loyal, very faithful. And it is in that loyal mood of servitorship and faithfulness to one's spiritual master, that all good qualities will develop. And then here, the list is given of the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava, which are quite something. It is not easy. A Vaishnava is kind. It's difficult to be kind. It's sort of like, it comes easy to be nasty. You know? It's natural, sort of, to get sarcastic or put somebody down. So it just happens. And to be kind, and to be really kind, not just sentimentally kind, it's quite a challenge. So we are going to go down a list of 26 qualities, and each of them is challenging us. Right? We're being challenged to be kind. Right? Think about that, how to be kind. It's not cheap, but to be really kind, to give substance. Kindness doesn't just mean to be always sentimental and sweet. Right? One must give substance. Another quality mentioned is truthful. A few qualities down. One must be truthful. Mm-hmm. And the truth, yes, somehow or other, is important, especially the absolute truth. Right. It's not so much about, never speaking a lie. Of course, it is mentioned that the earth cannot tolerate the weight of a liar. And therefore, in the age of Kali, the earth is very burdened, because everyone is a liar. So what to do? But lying or not lying is not the real criterion. The real criterion is we must speak the absolute truth. It's the absolute truth that must be spoken. And that can never be covered. That cannot be compromised. It may be presented sometimes in a tactful way, but it should not be compromised. And if anything is Srila Prabhupada's strength, it's for being not compromised. And just speaking the truth as it is, even if he had to use sometimes words that upset people, Prabhupada was ready to stand up for the truth. So that is the essence of truthful. Another quality mentioned is to be peaceful. One becomes peaceful when one becomes dependent on Krishna for the results. Karmaneva karasti mafalesu kadachana makarma fadahitu bhur. Krishna is the is the supreme controller. So we can work, but the results will not depend on us. Sometimes it works. Yeah? I mean, something just works. You surprised yourself. How did I do that? Yeah? I mean, did I do that? It just, in anything, you know, it just works. Yeah? Of course, if we are influenced by false ego, we immediately take credit for every little bit of success. Yeah? Say, oh yes, yes, I did this. I'm very natural. Of course, it was good because it came from the golden hand. Right? But the truth is, you know, who has a golden hand? Right? We have a golden hand when Krishna gives it, and you know, like, try and do it again, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Depends all on Krishna. So actually, the result of our activities are depending on Krishna. So one who can appreciate that the results of our activities are depending on Krishna, and everything in life is ultimately going on by Krishna's will. Not that we are sitting here just inactive, not doing anything and saying, I'm waiting for Krishna, everything depends on him. No, we work as if things depend on us to the best of our ability. But then we know at the end it depends on Krishna. So in this way one can be peaceful. One is not in anxiety. Because leave it up to Krishna. And Krishna is all good. So whatever comes, it is good. If it is heavy, then all right, then I must need the purification. And I can think of 1,000 reasons why I do need the purification. So how can I say that I don't need the purification? So like that, we can appreciate Krishna. Krishna is behind everything. So whatever happens, Krishna is the ultimate cause. And there's a purpose for it. When life gets heavy, and when everything seems to go wrong, and life is collapsing, it is as if we're losing everything. At that stage, when you lose everything, then you will see what Krishna consciousness you really have. See, you can have your Krishna consciousness in external things, living in the temple, being around so many devotees, the right pictures on the wall, you know, a great collection of Krishna conscious bhajans, right? A whole universe to sort of reflect Krishna consciousness. Sometimes I feel like that. I'm staying in the temple and everything is Krishna conscious. First of all, the deities are there, Prabhupada's Murti is there, the devotees are there, they're all nice, all wearing tilak, they're totally absorbed in service, and so many things. Shastra is discussed, prasadam is there. It's all transcendental, except me. Somehow I'm the only thing. The only element in that whole thing that's not transcendental. Right? So if suddenly all these external things are taken away, what is left of our Krishna consciousness? That we will see. That we will see. So in life, when it goes like that, that suddenly you start losing everything, everything goes wrong, one thing after another, at that stage, it will show how much Krishna consciousness actually is within. Yes, and that's it. We internally
just leave it up to Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Aham Ishvara, I am the controller. That is the material consciousness. Aham Bhogi Ishvaroham. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. So as long as that's the case, we will always be in anxiety. Bhayam dvitya bidivisitasyat. When you're separated from Krishna, when you see anything separated from Krishna, anxiety. Anxiety. Because this is the material world, right? It's like nothing is in our hands. It just goes like that. Huh? Yesterday I ate my tooth. What can you do? I wasn't planning it, but I did. I ate a tooth. Oh well, we'll see what happens today. You know, when it comes out. But I wasn't planning it. In fact, I went to the dentist before I came to Australia and had it all checked out. I thought, okay, I'll be all right. And he said, yeah, he signed off on it, everything great. And then yesterday I ate a tooth. That's life in the material world. You never know what will happen. Yeah, anything can happen. Remember Murphy's Law? Whatever can go wrong will go wrong. You heard of that one. So, the material energy, indeed, is tricky. Just when you have everything sort of organized and nicely lined up, suddenly the material energy gets a life of its own. And it goes totally in a different way than planned. That is the way it is in the material world. But a devotee at that stage will just say, okay, Krishna's desire, Krishna. Muslim also will say, Inshallah. So when we are God conscious, we can see the hand of the Supreme Lord and accept. So that is the only way to be peaceful, when we can accept. Because then when we try to bring everything under control and it doesn't work, then we know it's not really under my control, it's under Krishna's control. But if you're a materialist, you just think it's out of control. Alarm, alarm. There are cartoons, you can find them on the internet, from the New Yorker. And there are really good cartoons, extremely good cartoons. So there's this round table and there's these people sitting there. And you know, you have something called a think tank, a group of people. They sit down and they think about a problem and try to figure it out. So here's a group of people. It's not a think tank, it's a worry tank. And they're sitting there, you know, and one goes, you know, oh, they're all sitting there like, ah, oh, and one goes like, what if something will go wrong? And another one will go, what if nothing will go wrong? It's like the worry tank. Right? So, you know, what can we say? The New Yorker is super good. There's one cover of the New Yorker, now that I'm on the topic, and there's a bench, a park bench, and there are three ladies sitting on the bench. On the one side is a nun, right? Okay, completely covered, only her face is showing, sort of. Right? On the other end is a Muslim lady. She's even more covered, you know, all you see is like sort of the eyes, right? There's just some eyes there. The rest is all covered. And then in the middle, there's a girl sitting in a bikini, right? And she's got big sunglasses on. Isn't it good? Isn't it good? Very sharp, very sharp. It is like that. Yes, when one is not covered, when the body is not covered, then one has to cover the eyes out of embarrassment. What to say? So, devotees are meant to develop good qualities. On the one hand, good qualities develop automatically. Yes, yes, dear Bhagavati, Bhagavati, Kinchana, Sarvir, Bunais, Tatasana, Sati, Sala, Arava, Bhakta, Shu, Maha, Kutu, Mahatkuna, Manu, Rupina, Sati, Dhavatu, Vahir. That was a long time since I did that verse. It is said that a devotee develops all the good qualities of the devas, of the devatas, of divine beings, and that anyone else is riding in the chariot of the mind, the manorat, and riding in the chariot of the mind, sooner or later, even if they have all good qualities, they cannot keep them. And they cannot keep them. To be a vegetarian is a good thing. But if you're a vegetarian and you're not a devotee, you're not doing it out of devotional service, then you will be tested, like everyone will be tested in material situation, and then one day anything like, anyway, you know, maybe there's some, you know, anyway, you know. Because you have not promised it. You have not promised it before Krishna. Therefore we see that Srila Prabhupada, he knew who he was dealing with. When Prabhupada came to the West, Prabhupada made some adjustments. And one adjustment he made was that at the time of giving Diksha, he made people recite the four regulative principles. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta never did that, nor did, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do that when he initiated Rupa and Sanatan. It wasn't that he met Rupa and Sanatan and said, so, what are the four regulative principles that you promise to follow for the rest of your life? Nothing like that, no. But Prabhupada did it that way. And he had us say it very clear. Yeah, he knew, you know. If we don't say it, then we'd say, well, you know, I never really said that. I never really promised that. And so, you know, I mean, of course, I'm living by these standards, but then again, if the circumstances are, you know, then, well, I didn't really promise it, so I'm not really bound by it. It's a guideline. Yeah. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was treating his disciples in a different way. He was giving them a guideline. He preached that 64 rounds was the ideal, but that at least four should be chanted. Right? Like that. And then, of course, you weren't supposed to chant four if you lived in the ashram. You're supposed to try and chant 64. Right? That was obvious from the preaching. But then he left it up to the disciples to fill it in. But he was also then having high expectations from them. Prabhupada realized what he was doing. Satsarup Maharaj wrote about the early days, and he wrote like, Lord Ramachandra, he said, went to Lanka with an army of monkeys, and Prabhupada had to do it with hippies from the Lower East Side. That's what Satsarup Maharaj wrote. And he was one of them, so he could say that. And, but that's how it is, you know. So what is... And we should not think that we are any better. We should understand we are residents from the age of Kali. We were born in this age. Manda sumanda matiyo manda bhagya yupadruta. Sleep, laziness, slow in our mind. We're not fixed. So we need to be fixed by a promise and spell it out. Spell it out while we're promising to follow the minimum 16. We said, okay, well, what to do then?
Then I have to. Huh?
If we hadn't promised it, would we really do it every day? Or would we find some days to say, well, today I really want to, but I really cannot? Probably we would. Probably we would. So like this, we can see that these qualities in us that need to develop are, they're coming, first of all, by awareness. Gradually we become aware. We become aware that humility is a virtue. I mean, honestly speaking, before coming to this movement, I never thought about it. I don't know if any of you ever thought about it. I never thought about humility. It never crossed my mind.
Humility? I mean, never thought about it. Yeah.
Somehow or other, in the football club, I scored a goal by accident.
I don't know how I did it.
You know, I mean, with my left foot, and I mean, I'm not even, you know, I'm right-handed, right-footed. So, with my left foot, I did this loop, right, from a great distance, and I went right over the keeper into the goal. And everyone's going, amazing, what a goal. And I said, oh yeah. I mean, yeah. It was a little difficult. Kind of thing. That's what you say in the material world. Yeah. I mean, you don't say like, oh, well, it was an accident, you know. You never say that. You know? But that's the truth. An accident. Somehow or other, the ball bounced off my foot and jumped into the goal. An accident. It is like that. Humility is an awkward thing in the material world, you know. I saw, there was a thing I saw once on TV, and there was this this man who was very humble, and they were making some sort of slapstick thing out of it, you know. He had to go for a job interview, and there was a window, and with that mirrored kind of glass, and the boss was sitting behind the window, and there was a loudspeaker, and the voice of the boss, a very bossy voice, came out of the wall. So the man comes, he has a cap, you know, so he comes in, he takes his cap off, you know, and holds it in both hands, and he stands there. And all the time, whenever the boss spoke, the boss, so he stands there. Boss says, name. He says, Jones, thank you very much, please. To everything, he says, thank you very much, please. Name, age. And this boss is just barking at him, barking, you know, one question after another. Age, Ellis, thank you very much, please. Thank you very much, please. Yeah. All the time. And this humility looked like, he looked like a total fool. Like a walkover, like a doormat, you know. And if you can't, you know, if you can't show some teeth, you know what I mean? You just stand there humble, more taller than a tree. In the material world, that's totally, you're a fool. You're a fool, right? Nowadays, you got to be slick, right? You know, it's a real slick dude. Hoo-hoo. You know, cool, daddy cool, slick, you know. Okay, where's the dictionary? Slick, slippery. Slick is another word for slippery. And it doesn't sound so good. If you're slippery, makes you think of a snake, right? Snakes are slippery. Somebody who's slippery. Dishonest, right? So, but that's the model. Hey, daddy, cool, slick, does the trick, yeah, there you go. So, what kind of role models are we having? It's the opposite of the Vaishnava culture. So it's a bit of an adjustment for us. It's a bit of a jump, right, from what we were to what we have to become. And in India, it is no better. Just think of an Indian New Year's party, and that sums it all up, if you know what I mean. I've seen them on Connaught Circus in Delhi. I happened to walk in Connaught Circus in Delhi one New Year's Eve, and there, the whole big roundabout, it's quite big, was just jammed with cars, and people were all sitting on the roof of the cars, they're sitting in the back of the cars, all with bottles, everyone had a bottle, and they're all happy new year, and I go, my God, I've never seen anything like this anywhere in the world, you know? And Prabhupada said, India will be like that, the most elevated and the most degraded. That's what he said. And you see so many villagers with so many scars from so many operations, and who stole the organs and sold them for a good, for good, good property. We remove the appendix and grab a kidney as well. What to do? Such things are going on. So, Kali Yuga Chandra, eh? It was Kali Yuga at its peak. So it's quite a change. And of course, when we are devotees, we are convinced, so we give up the gross aspect of all these things. We're not going to walk around with our nose up in the air, claim, you know, you can't make that, right? But to really get a mood of humility, a real mood of kindness, it doesn't come. It's not natural in Kali Yuga. It's not natural. It takes time to develop these Vaishnava qualities in a deep way. One has to embrace them. One has to want them, right? Until you want it. You can't wait. When are they going to come? When it's going to happen? It is said, yes, yes, ti bhakti bhagavati ra kinchana sarve gunai satara sati samasati sa. It is said, all good qualities will automatically develop in a Vaishnava. Okay, well, I'm waiting. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. It's not happening yet, but I'm sure one day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be an angel. Not quite. Not quite like that. It's not that one morning you wake up and what's on my back, you know? Jeez, on the back. Wings, back wings. Check it out. Woke up one morning with wings, and now what, you know? It's not entirely like that. At one point, actually, we begin to value such qualities. Being humble, oh yes, it's a good thing. Being kind, wow, yes. Being truthful, gosh, yeah, never thought of that. Faultless, wow. Magnanimous, giving away generously. Not only with what you have, but even yourself. A Vaishnava is so generous, he doesn't just give his possessions.
Yes, I'll give you a donation. Yeah, it's a dollar.
Oh, thank you so much. No. A Vaishnava, he says, here, take me. Take me, and with that, you've got everything I have automatically. Here, take me. Put my head at your feet, I'm yours. Take me and everything I have. You, that's yours also. Yes. That's Vaishnava. So, yeah, very magnanimous. Not possessive. That's really very nice also. Saint Francis of Assisi is famous, you know, for whenever anybody wanted anything he had, take it. Whatever it was, take it. He's, you know, even to the point that he was going bare feet in the winter. No problem. Take everything. Oh, you want it? Oh, take it. Please, take it. So what a mood, huh? Of course, you know, when we use things for Krishna, it's a little different, you know. Nope. No, you're not touching nothing, no. I'm looking after this. For Krishna. That also is required. Yeah, it's required. But still, you know, like if you look at these qualities, so nice, so nice. Poetic is a quality, and that one is highlighted in this purport. A devotee becomes poetic. Why? Because a devotee is exploring Krishna's qualities, and Krishna's qualities are just amazing. Just amazing. So anyone in describing Krishna's qualities will sooner or later become poetic. You can't get around it. And you, Srila Rupa Goswami is quoting a verse, Krishna's Kaviraj is quoting Rupa Goswami, who's quoted a verse, to say it exactly, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is explained that, he said, like, without metaphor, you cannot understand the nature of the Absolute Truth or the nature of rasa. You need metaphor to explain. Because, what are we going to say?
Krishna is beautiful. I can say he's beautiful. But if I don't use a metaphor to explain it, there is no taste with it. Okay, he's beautiful. Krishna is beautiful.
How do you feel?
Krishna is beautiful. Wow. Great news. Yeah, Krishna is beautiful. Amazing.
Krishna is...
I can put in some drama in my voice. Krishna is beautiful. Okay. All right. It's exciting.
But when you say Krishna is beautiful, like the monsoon cloud, which is there, appearing in the sky, just when the sun is at its brightest point, and then this dark, blackish rain cloud comes, and because the light of the sun is so bright, the blue from the very blue sky is coming right through, and the effulgence is white. So he's black like a rain cloud, and at the same time he is blue, and at the same time like almost white and effulgence.
Or he gets more excited than Krishna is blue or God is black. Yeah. See, so it has to become descriptive. It has to become descriptive. Right? It cannot just be saying Krishna is beautiful. Beautiful. No. Sharp-shaped earrings swinging to and fro. Looking at Krishna. So that is, it is said, and it is said, what is the use of poetry when it doesn't, like the hunter's arrow, pierce the heart and makes the head spin? So like that, we can see the purpose of it all, the meaning of it all. So that's the idea. Descriptions about Krishna become more and more rich when they are poetic. But the essence is the substance. Metaphors and all these things, comparisons, very nice. But there are two types of decorations used in metaphor. One is an ornamental metaphor. A metaphor that's just for the sake of decoration. And the other one is a cognitive metaphor, a metaphor that has meaning. And when it has meaning, then it becomes something extraordinary. So that's the essence, it's the meaning of the Bhagavatam. Oh yes, Sukadeva made it very sweet, but it is the meaning, it is the clarity, it cuts through all illusion. It's not beating around the bush, it's getting to the point completely. It's refreshing. It's not indirect at all. Bhagavatam is straight in the face. You get the facts as it is, the straight truth, and that makes it very potent and powerful. So Sukadeva Goswami, as a poet, is speaking strong. Every word is strong. So therefore, after Maharaj Pariksit had heard, and after Sukadeva Goswami had clearly pointed out that the worship of the demigods made no sense because the fruits are simply temporary and they just make you attached to the temporary and take you even further away from Krishna. The other day, I somewhere mentioned something about drugs and how drugs give you the experience that you go forward. You take some drug, and instead of walking, you're jumping or flying forward. But the truth is, although you feel like you're going forward, you're actually going backward. And through the drug, you rise above your problems. But it feels like you're rising above your problems. But in reality, your problems are still there. And then you have a new problem as well, named the drug or a habit. So like that, it actually sets you back. So in the same way, when we get involved with enjoying the fruits of demigod worship, same. It makes us feel like we're going forward.
because we're getting something. But because it's temporary, we're going to lose it. And then the same problem of not having what we wanted will be back. But then, at the same time, we'll have a new problem. A big new material attachment. Because once you've had something, if you lose it, it's so difficult. It's so difficult. Demigod worship doesn't just give us temporary benefit, it sets us back, actually. It sets us back. So now, after Sukadev Goswami has clearly established that demigod worship is a waste of time and that pure devotional service is the only solution, and then he concludes that with the verse Akama Sarva Kama Vamoksha Kama Udarati Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yeta Purusamparam, which is whether you have material desires or you don't have material desires, just engage in the process of pure devotional service and everything will be fulfilled. And now after that, now the question comes, after hearing all that from Sukadev Goswami, what else did Maharaj Pariksit inquire about? And that question is raised today and tomorrow. We may find out. So that question will remain unanswered. Any questions? Any comments? You know, I can give you sweet words. Oh, you're having such a problem. Oh, poor you. Oh, I understand, really. I know what it's like, you know. So you feel better. But it didn't offer you a single solution. So there's no real substance. It's just words. Words to pacify you. But no real solution. So what's the benefit of that? There must be a real solution, that the problem is really gone. The problem must be solved. So the problem is birth, death, old age, and disease. And what is the solution? Oh, it's okay. Yeah, you know, just go for a holiday to a sunny island. Okay, yeah, sounds good, yeah. Well, let's go for a holiday to Mauritius and just, you know, enjoy. And oh, life is so good. But where's the substance? Yeah, okay, Mauritius is a great place, it's a wonderful island, there are beautiful beaches, no doubt about it, never gets as cold as Melbourne, I mean, wonderful place, but they also have birth, death, old age and disease, and what are we going to do about that? So your whole Mauritius solution didn't work to solve the four seasons in one day in Melbourne. What about, you know, birth, death, old age and disease? So your solution has no substance. Sorry, don't buy that. I want the real thing. Srimad Bhagavatam. There's substance. Yes?
Would you be able to say something on the idea of transcendental acceptance in terms of Krishna consciousness, which is, I consider, superior to temporal tolerance?
Oh, yes. You know, just tolerating temporary, the conditions of life was displayed by Lord Rishabhdev. In Bhagavatam, the fifth canto, it's described that Rishabhdev was practicing Jada Yoga, or the type of yoga where you become like a stone. Not stoned, but a stone. Just to get it right. Somebody might think I'm getting it wrong here, so just in case, right? That's why I clarified it, you know. But you become like a stone, and you just got to tolerate whatever comes like a stone. But that is the lower end, because the higher transcendental thing is to connect with Krishna. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha, to make a connection with Krishna. That's what it's all about. It's not about, you know, I am like a stone, I don't feel anything, I'm a rock. No. Yes, I tolerate things, but the real thing is get absorbed in serving Krishna. And the more you are absorbed in Krishna, the less you're affected by these small things of the material world. So that's the thing. It's about relating to Krishna. That's transcendental. Making the relationship with Krishna. Yes, that's always superior. Very much so. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Uchite. So to connect with Krishna. Only then are we really rising above.
Finished. Looks like. Okay. Thank you.
Shri Baba Ki Jai. To Prabhu Ki. Mm-hmm.